Please open up your Bibles to Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 to 24. We'll be looking at a sermon titled, Serving God with Our Wealth. If you're able, please rise for the reading of God's Word. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body, so if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. This is the word of the Lord. You may be seated. Well, as we read that passage just now, my guess is that some of you are thinking, oh no, it's this sermon. Because some of you recognize this passage and probably heard sermons about it. And yes, it's Sermon on Money. And whenever money is talked about in a sermon, there are usually two responses. One is, oh, I hate this. Or the other is, oh, this is interesting, I'm intrigued. That's because money is a sensitive subject. And I'm sure not many of us would enjoy someone making comments about how much money you make, or how much money you spend, or how much you save. Well, the good news and the bad news at the same time is that this sermon is not just about money. It's about our treasures on earth. That which we value as treasure in this life. And just money just happens to be a prime example of it. So although we'll be talking about money most of the time today, it really has to do with every other treasures on earth. But I'm really here to tell you that this message is, when viewed in a larger context, is about relationship. It's not about rules and regulations on how we should spend our money. It's about our relationship with the Father. And because this is such an important topic, Jesus has talked more about money than any other subject. He taught about money more than faith and prayer. And here in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus brings up the topic of money for the first time in the Gospel of Matthew. So in the context of the Sermon on the Mount, which we've been going through for this year, where Jesus is teaching his disciples about what it's like to be a citizen of the kingdom, and in the context of teaching about true righteousness that exceeds that of the Pharisees and the scribes, here we have Jesus teaching us about money. So we have to hear this message within that context. So since this sermon is not about rules and regulations about money, what is it about? It's going to be more of a time to reflect on where we stand in terms of our relationship with God and money. And because money is one of the clearest spiritual diagnostic tools that we have, it tells us more about our spiritual state more clearly, I think, than any other thing. And the three qualities to look for in our hearts as we diagnose our relationship with God and with money are the following: eternity, generosity, and fidelity. As in, do I have eternity, generosity, and fidelity when I make or spend money? Or put them in a statement. Today I'll be saying, Christians live with eternity in their hearts, with generosity in their hearts, and with fidelity in their hearts. As in, do I have an eternal perspective when spending or saving money? Do I view others with generosity or with greed? Or do I see wealth as God's or mine? And we'll be looking at this through three key terms that Jesus used today, and that is treasures, eyes, and masters. Now, it really should be four terms, because verses 25 to 34, which we'll be looking at next week, is actually still a continued thought. Jesus actually says, talks about two treasures, two eyes, two masters, and two concerns. In essence, they are about the ways of this world versus ways of the kingdom of God, and living as citizens of this world versus living as citizens of the kingdom. So we're going to be looking at the first three today, and the fourth one we'll look at next Sunday. Now, because as Dr. Martin Lloyd-Jones notes in his sermons on this subject, there are two ways that the world tempts us as us Christians. One is through the love of this world, love for the things of this world. And the second is through anxiety. And we'll be looking at the first one today. And Little Sunflowers, this sermon will be a little difficult because it talks about money. But I do not want you guys to just, you know, sit there and be like, oh, this has nothing to do with me. Learning about God and money now is so important because it will be a lot harder when you guys grow up and make more money. And it'll be harder to keep a good relationship between God and money then unless you start now. So here's the first point that I want to share with you guys, and that is that Christians live with eternity in their hearts. Let me read verse 19 again. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth. Now, what does that mean? Well, there are some important observations and questions that we need to ask here first. So let me go through that first. First, grammatically, do not lay up is in the present imperative with a negative. Now, what that means is that it can be read as do not keep laying up. Jesus is saying stop doing what is already happening. It means that he knows that the listeners were already doing that with their wealth. They were laying it up for themselves and for their own use. Right? It was an existing pattern. Now, quickly, then a question comes to mind, right? Is it wrong for us Christians to have possessions, right? Jesus is saying, you know, stop laying up treasures on earth. Stop laying up, you know, things, wealth, and all those things on this earth for yourself. Then is it wrong for us to have things? Well, like, what about the RRSPs that we have? CPPs, stocks, portfolios, real estate. What about all those things? That's not what Jesus means here, right? And the Bible is clear on this too. There is nothing wrong with having possessions. In fact, Christians are seen having possessions even in the New Testament after Jesus, right? And they use it for ministry, for sharing, for, you know, filling the needs of others. Jesus and his disciples also carried money around for ministry, which Judas Iscariot was in charge of. And we know that he took money out of there for himself too, right? Apostle Paul admonishes some Christians who are not working at the time, right? Just relying on other people's grace and mercy to start working and earn money, right? Have possessions. So what is Jesus saying here then? Problem is when we keep laying them up for ourselves. Do not keep laying up for yourselves treasures on earth, he says. The focus is on the motive. It's on the heart again. Like how giving and praying and fasting that we've been looking at for the past few weeks were done with selfish motives, right? These Pharisees. Here, Jesus warns us against laying up treasures for selfish reasons. Warren Worsby, renowned Bible teacher and prolific writer, writes this in his commentary on Matthew. He says, "It is not wrong to possess things, but it is wrong for things to possess us." Let me say that again. It is not wrong to possess things, but it is wrong for things to possess us. And that's what Jesus is saying here. And the key word is the word treasure. Notice that Jesus didn't say, do not lay up for yourselves money on this earth. He said treasures. Treasure is not for sharing, right? Treasure is yours. As kids, didn't you have like box of treasures? Maybe you still have it. Box of trinkets and, you know, trinkets and stuff, right? You would hide them in your room somewhere and never let anyone find them or touch them. That's treasure. Treasure doesn't flow out, right? And the word for treasure in Greek means that which is stored up. Stored up, not flowing out. In fact, it's the word where the word thesaurus comes from. Thesaurus literally means a storehouse of words. More words come in, but they don't go out. That's the point. But treasures are not limited to money, and that's something we have to remember. It's anything that we value as most important. I heard Pastor Francis Chan ask this question before, and I've asked you guys before as well. If you could choose between two heavens, okay, one with only Jesus and nothing else in there, or another heaven with everything that you enjoy on this earth but no Jesus, which heaven would you choose? The answer to that question reveals what the treasures, what your treasure really is. And what are some of these treasures that Jesus is talking about? It could be your money. It could be your house, your family, your children, your spouse, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your beauty, your strength, your network, the things that you enjoy more than any other things, the thing that which you live for, anything that you treasure in your heart. But the thing is, the tough thing about this is that these are all good things, right? It's not bad. I mean, in fact, it is actually wrong to not provide for your family. These are all good things, but when they become the ultimate things, they become your idols and they start to possess you. But Jesus reminds us of the obvious truth. You can't even keep them safe. Right? Moth and rust destroy and thieves break in and steal, meaning it is really never safe. House prices go down, stocks go down, beauty fades, strength fades, family and friends pass away, reputations can be lost. In fact, I treasure my kids. And that's why I get angry at them when they do dumb things sometimes, because they are jeopardizing their safety. It's really hard to keep them safe. So what does Jesus say? He says, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. So what is this treasures in heaven? Well, to explain that, let me give you guys an illustration. This year is Monopoly. I'm pretty sure that most of you have played this at least at one point. If you're from Korea like me, you played something similar called Blue Marble, right? Let me explain this. This game, right, is life is a lot like Monopoly. The point of this game is to be the last person standing with basically everything, right? And it really looks like some people are going for that in real life, right? Becoming trillionaires and so on. But the whole process is supposed to be fun, right? It's a game. Now, some of you know that sometimes this game is anything but fun. I can tell you, personally, that Joanna and I no longer play this game because the last time we played, she was virtually bankrupt. She only had like a few dollars left. She wanted to quit. I'm like, no, you're staying until I get every last penny. I was a cruel tycoon. But as you may know very well, when you play this game in order to, you know, get as much money as possible, people can get hurt. Right? They may cry even. Just watch little kids play this game. But remember, this is just a game. There is an end. Right? And at the end of the game, you could be sitting in a pile of fake money surrounded by fake houses and hotels, only to have them put back into the box. Then what do you have left? Let's say that you were cruel and violent towards other players while playing this game. You cheated, you manipulated, and you lied to get your money, and you won. And you never helped anyone in need, right? But at the end, you won, right? But at what cost? Because once the game is put away, you are now left standing with those whom you played with. And the relationship with you and others has gone sour. You forgot that there was more to life after the game. But imagine playing this game a little differently, right? Some people realize that this is just a game. It's for fun. There is an end to this game and that there is life outside this game. So they take this game as an opportunity to build friendship and make good memories. So you go about this game knowing that the players around you are real people with real feelings who will be with you after the game, right? There's going to be dinner time coming soon. So your goal is to make this game as fun and pleasant as possible, right? Showing a little grace here, showing, you know, a little generosity here, making sure that everyone has fun. And at the end of the game, maybe you didn't win. But as you're sitting around the dinner table, you can talk happily about what happened in the game. The game is done, but the relationship will last. Our life here on earth is a lot like that. Right? That's what it means to live with eternity in your hearts. And God has planted eternity in our hearts through the gospel. Do not lay up for yourselves Monopoly game money. Right? But lay up for yourselves that which do not go away. Your character, your relationship with God and with others. Those are the treasures in heaven that do not go away. Because all that we can take to heaven is ourselves and our relationships. Remember, guys, when you go up in heaven and you meet, you know, all of us here again in heaven, we will remember what happened on earth. We don't automatically just forget what happened on earth and then start introducing each other again. We remember what happened. So remember that we have an eternity ahead of us. Do not forget the point of this game we call life. For what happens after the game ends matters more. And to help us do that, God gives us eyes of generosity. And so Christians live with generosity in their hearts. It says, the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? Now, at first, these two verses seem really out of place. I can kind of make sense of treasures and master kind of being related. What about the eyes? And I also struggle with this verse too. Why is Jesus all of a sudden talking about eyes? Well, that's because this is actually a common idiom for those in Jesus' days. A healthy eye is an idiom for generous eyes. And a bad eye is an idiom for stingy or greedy eye. Here are some examples from the Bible. In Proverbs chapter 20, verse 22, a stingy man, and in Hebrew it literally says a man whose eyes are evil, hastens after wealth and does not know that poverty will come upon him. Right? Stingy man and is greedy. Deuteronomy chapter 15 verse 9, it says, take care lest there be an unworthy thought in your heart and you say, the seventh year, the year of release is near, and your eye look grudgingly, again, literally it says evil eye, on your poor brother and you give him nothing and he cried to the Lord against you and you be guilty of sin. Positively, Proverbs chapter 22 verse 9, whoever has a bountiful eye, a generous eye, literally good eye or healthy eye, will be blessed, for he shares his bread with the poor. Like the saying we have in English, the eye is a window to the soul. How we see people reveals the state of our heart. If you look at others with a generous eye, looking for people to help, right, for opportunities to serve, in other words, with selfless, generous eyes, it means there's light in our hearts. But if you look at others with an evil eye, a bad eye, looking at people as opportunities for selfish gain, it means that there's darkness in our hearts. For example, when there was news of war with images of, you know, apartments being blown up, buildings coming down, and people dying, some people immediately acted to provide relief for the people by gathering funds and supplies to relieve them, right, to help them. But some people immediately went onto the stock market to start buying cement and other materials. Why? Because war means that there will be a need to rebuild that which was destroyed. And those people made lots of money. If you want to lay out treasures in heaven, you need to find opportunities to do that. And that comes through eyes of generosity. And arguably, the most effective way to be generous, to be more generous, is to realize how much you've received through someone else's generosity. And the good news is that as Christians, we have already received more than we can dare to hope. There was a man that we looked at about a month ago, right? His name was Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector, and when he saw people, he saw dollar signs, right? How much can I make off of this person? And he was a chief tax collector. He was rich. But then he met Jesus, right? And after spending time with him, right, he tells Jesus and everyone around the table that he'll pay back four times the amount that he frauded someone and give half of his wealth to those in need. And Jesus says that salvation has come to this house. Now, did Jesus give salvation to Zacchaeus after he decided to give all these money away? Or is it because Zacchaeus was already saved that he decided to give them away? We are saved by God's grace alone through faith in Christ alone. In other words, it is through God's incredible generosity, well, that which we call grace, that we are saved. And we can express our gratitude by showing generosity to others. Again, showing generosity doesn't get us salvation. We are generous because we have already been saved. And Jesus says that when we feed those who are hungry and thirsty, when we clothe those who are naked, visit those who are in prison, we are actually doing it for Him. And if we say that we love God, then we must be generous. Apostle John writes in one of his letters, he says, "We love because he first loved us." Right? That's a famous verse that we've said many times before, but here's the rest. If anyone says, "I love God," and hates his brother, he is a liar. For he who does not love his brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. And this commandment we have from him: whoever loves God must also love his brother. Generosity doesn't earn us salvation, but those who are saved are generous. Or put another way, generosity doesn't mean that we love God, but those who love God are generous. And the quality that ties all this together is fidelity. So here's my last point. Christians live with fidelity in their hearts. Verse 24, "No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money." Fidelity is a hard word for maybe some little sunflowers here. Fidelity means faithfulness, loyalty, allegiance. It's like having a covenant. And the question of fidelity is a question about worship. And we all worship something. Even atheists worship something. That which we hope in, find security in, trust in, obey, find joy in, that is what we worship. And what we worship is our master. We listen to it. We follow its will. And one of the best ways to see what we worship is to look at our bank statements, our credit card statements, even our browser history. Where does most of your money go? Is it for the kingdom's cause or something else? When you open up your phone and see your screen usage, which app takes up most of your time? If someone looked at how you spend your time, what would they see? Remember what Jesus said earlier. He said, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." It's not where your heart is, there will be your treasure. It's where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Whatever you do, your heart follows. This is why Jesus said, "Love your enemies," right? Not with feelings, but with action, right? Because feelings follow action. Motion before emotion. Same goes with how you spend your money. Where you spend the most of your money, your heart is bound to follow. Right? Imagine where you put $10 on something and like $1,000 or something, and you know, like it's like an investment. Where do you think your thoughts gonna go more? The $10 one? No. The $1,000 one. Then let's say you put like, I don't, maybe for some people $1,000, like, okay, that's okay if I lose it. Let's say it's all your life savings. All day, all night, right? Your thoughts gonna go over there. If someone were to look at where your money goes, would they be able to tell that you're a Christian? And here's a real kicker. You cannot serve both God and money. A lot of Christians try to live faithfully to God and also try to pursue worldly success. At first, it may seem like you can have both, right? Have God delight in you and have the people delight in you. But there will come a day when you have to choose one over the other. And money is a powerful motivator. Many people have compromised their faith because of money. And the key to disarming the power of money are two things. One, to remember that all that you have belongs to God, and two, to give it away. Let me talk about the first one. You came into this world with nothing and you leave with nothing. All that you have right now is what God has put in your care as his steward. It's not yours. You are his steward, taking care of what he has given you. We must not become proud of our ability to earn money. The more we become proud, the more we start thinking that this is our money. Listen to what Moses said just before the Israelites entered the promised land, where they were, you know, the land was fertile and they were going to be, you know, more blessed and bountiful and rich and abundant. This is what he said. "Beware lest you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gotten me this wealth. You shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth, and that he may confirm his covenant that he swore to your fathers, as it is this day. And if you forget the Lord your God and go after other gods and serve them and worship them, I solemnly warn you today that you shall surely perish. Like the nations that the Lord makes to perish before you, so shall you perish because you will not obey the voice of the Lord your God. What is Moses saying here? If you serve money, if you serve your treasures, you will perish. It's the same warning Jesus gives us today. We must remember that what we have is not ours. Only when you put God as your master can we put money under our control. When we think that we're in control of our money without God, we're actually under money's control. Ask yourself this. When was the last time you said that you have enough? How much is enough? Do you actually have a number? Tim Keller once said that when he talks about the seven deadly sins, like, anger, lust and whatnot, people know when they committed those sins, right? They know when they committed murder, when they've done adultery and so on. They don't know when they're committing greed. It's that scary. It's so subtle. Unless we have God as our master, we will not be able to catch this. My good friend Enoch Wong, who is CEO of Risable Finance, teaches that we have to stop asking, how much of my money should I give to God? But instead start asking, God, how do I manage 100% of my money faithfully? The money that I have, money that I'm earning, money that I saved, even my debt. To have God as your master means to see our wealth as not ours, but God's. And the second way to break free from the bondage of money is to actually give it away. And here I want to introduce you to the spiritual discipline of tithing. Yes, this is a spiritual discipline, which is why I find it most important to talk about it here. Some of you are already familiar with tithing, right? It means to give a 10% of your income to God. This was a practice that began in the Old Testament, but the first time it was practiced was done by Abraham, well, before his name became Abraham, but Abram. It says in Genesis chapter 14, this is where he meets Melchizedek, right, king of Salem. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was priest of God Most High. And he blessed him and said, blessed be Abram by God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth. And blessed be God Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hand. And Abram gave him a tenth of everything. Now, why does Abram give a tenth to Melchizedek? Because he believes that God is indeed the possessor of heaven and earth. Everything belongs to God. And so he gives a tenth to Melchizedek, who is a priest to God, Yahweh. And giving a tenth is to confess with your wealth that all that I have is yours. That's what that tenth means. By tithing, you're not just giving a tenth, you're giving the first tenth to God. Before you put it into savings, before you put it into your bills, before anything, you give God a tenth to say that all this belongs to you. That's the meaning of it. It's not the amount that's important here, but the fact that you're giving the first portion to God and saying, everything that I have this month, this week, whatever, it's from you, God. And I acknowledge this by giving a tenth back to you. And tithing didn't end in New Testament. Although it doesn't talk about it as much, it's not mentioned, not because it's gone, but it's because it's assumed. It's a spiritual discipline that everyone practiced. Now, I understand that giving a tenth to church is not easy, especially if you're new to this spiritual discipline. But let me give you this illustration. Right, on this screen, you see a weight, right? It's a plate, like 45 pounds. That's about as heavy as like a full checked baggage, okay? Just a little lighter than that. Let each of these plates represent your financial obligations, your mortgage, your rent, right? Tuition, groceries, debt, whatever you have to pay. Right? And say you want to add hobbies on top of that, add extra plates. Trying to lift them all, let's say there's just all here, you try to lift them all at once, it's not going to work. It's really heavy, right? The more obligation you have too, you're going to struggle. And you may find no meaning in paying for these, right? Do you find spiritual meaning when you're paying for your mortgage? When you're paying your tuition? Like, do you feel all holy as you do that? Probably not. Now you see this bar, right? This weighs the same as one of those plates. It's also like 45 pounds. Just lifting the bar alone would be hard for someone who has never done that before. Asking you to give a tithe to church is like adding this on top of all of that, right? It feels like a heavy burden, I know. But what tithing does is actually give meaning to those weights. It's like this. Your house that you pay for becomes God's house, and you are now open to inviting others to serve them. Your tuition are not just for your own future and benefit, but for the kingdom and for others. By tithing, you acknowledge that everything that you have belongs to God. And through tithing, everything now has meaning. It is a spiritual discipline, and this is how we show our fidelity to God. So, dear church, where do you stand in terms of your relationship with God and money? Maybe not where you'd like to be. And Jesus knows that too. And that's why he came to this earth. He gave all that he had, even his life, so that he could be with us for all eternity. The reason why he was able to go to the cross, give everything that he had at the cross, is because he saw what lies ahead in eternity. And he did so with greatest generosity, for we did not deserve any of this. And to show us his fidelity, his steadfast love, his covenantal love, he came to suffer and die for us, as was promised since the beginning. As we've read earlier, we love because he first loved us. So remember his love, his grace that lasts all eternity, so that the fullness of his love may fill our hearts, so that we too may love God and others like Jesus did, with our hearts filled with eternity, generosity, and fidelity.